it and see if this is working. I'll have to hear how it goes. You're my guinea pig. Okay, we're recording now. Let me think. It's still Wednesday, July 16th. It's 11 o'clock. We're on our way to New York. Mom and I are in our van. It's 2003. I'm going to write this. I'm going to say the date so that 50 years from now, when someone finds these under my bed, I'll know what they're about. Ben and I are in the back seat, so we're listening to some tunes, which I'm going to put in the back. And this is my great idea for Christmas presents for all of my siblings. I'm going to be interviewing my parents and Todd's parents to try to get some history. And then we're going to create some albums with pictures from Mom and Dad's childhood and preserve memories. This is a living history project. Right, Mom?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. See, but once we start talking, you won't remember that we're recording. Okay. So, here's what I want to know are things about your childhood, stories, different kinds of things that are important to you. For example, what...
I'm the one that doesn't have a memory.
I know. Well, I'm not being specific.
Okay.
So just tell me, what's your most memorable birthday when you were a kid?
Well,
it could be good or bad memory.
I don't really remember. I used to spend a week with my godmother around my birthday every summer with my godparents.
And who are your godparents?
Irene and Ray Bard.
Oh, really?
Irene Bard was my mother's best friend when she was growing up. And she and Ray were my godparents.
Is that Misty and Ray? No,
no,
that's a different...
Irene and Ray are both dead.
Oh, okay. In New York, or...?
Yeah, in Rochester. They lived in Greece. And they had three sons. They had no daughters. And I used to go, and I was always the queen for a whole week. And they would treat me like a queen, and we would do things. And I was very close with their oldest son, Carl. And probably my most memorable birthday would have been my first birthday, which I personally don't remember. But since I was told about it all my life, my mother made the first cake she ever made in her life. And it, as we know, grandmother's never been a great baker.
Understatement of the world.
She made this cake, and it actually came out well. And she frosted it, and it was a thing of great beauty. And they were having people over for my birthday. And she put me on the potty. I was 1 year old. She put me on the potty, and she went upstairs to change her clothes or whatever before the company arrived. And Tommy John, who was 2 and a half, went and got the cake off the counter and gave it to me for my birthday on the potty. And when my mother came back downstairs, I was covered with chocolate from head to foot. The cake was a disaster. And Tommy John was very amused.
Did he get beat?
I don't remember. I was only a year old. I don't really remember it. But I can remember for years because it was the first cake mother ever made. She wanted to kill Tommy John.
Uh-huh.
But there were many of those cakes.
Now, were birthdays when you were growing up, were they a really big deal? Like, did Grandma make a big deal about them? Like you make a big deal for ours?
Yeah. I always had friends over and, you know, a type of a party. I mean, but it was pretty much the same ball of wax. I mean, it wasn't really, you know, anything that stands out. Just the fact that it was, I mean, birthdays were always celebrated. There was always a cake and, you know, it was a family affair.
Does this mean we're in New York?
Yep.
Okay. Down. We're almost in New York now.
Thank you.
We're in the troll booth, Ben. How much is that one?
Yay! I'm paying the tolls.
$210. Well, I'll get the ones out because I'm not digging in your purse. You can dig
it. I got it right here.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I've got the 10 cents. Well, I know. I just like to make sure.
Yeah, the 10 cents will be part
of it. I can ship in the 10 cents.
Okay, where do we resume? On the right?
Yes, top left. The top left. Or bottom left, I'm sorry. You just turned it off, so you got to hit the top left again and then the bottom left.
Okay, I always forget that.
We're setting the cruise control.
That's it.
Yes. Is it set? But this van, you got to accelerate to the speed you want and then set it because the acceleration button doesn't work right.
Well,
you end up going like 100 miles an hour.
That would be excessive.
Yeah, it doesn't make you popular on the roadway.
That's pretty much what I remember about birthdays.
What about illnesses? Tell me about the mumps. Or when? What was it? You all got your consoles out? Was it mumps or consoles?
Both. When I was in, I think Mike is 2 years younger than I am, so I was probably, he was two, I was like 4.5 or 5, I think, and I'm not exactly sure the age, but Mike almost died, and they thought it. It probably is what Crick Death is. My grandfather lived with us at the time, and Grandpa had always worked as a night watchman,
mm-hmm.
and so he never slept at night. I mean, on the nights.
This is Grandma's father.
Yes, on the nights that Grandpa wasn't working, he would sit at the kitchen table and play solitaire all night, and everybody was asleep, and. For some reason, Grandpa heard Mike gag, and he got up and he went up to the crib and he picked Mike up and he was blue. And of course, he woke my mother up, and of course, by the time mother got up and so on and so forth, Mike was just fine. Well, the next day she took him or called Dr. Callahan. That was the family doctor, and he used to come to the house for house calls. And he said that Mike's tonsils were so big that they could close the opening in his throat. So Dr. Callahan said, well, if Mike has to have his tonsils out, we might as well take everybody's tonsils out. So even Eileen, who wasn't even one of ours, she just lived there, mother took care of her. So Eileen and I and Danny and Tommy and Mike, all five of us went to have our tonsils taken out together, and I remember being in the hospital, and Eileen and I were in a room on one side, and the three boys were in the room on the other side, and we'd run after we got our tonsils out the next day or so. We would run back and forth across the halls and jump on the beds, and it was quite an experience.
And was it just they didn't have children's hospitals at the time. It was just a regular
hospital, yeah.
Like a general hospital.
I think
hospital.
It was like a children's wing or something. I remember there being other kids around, but I don't know. I was pretty young. But I remember it being a family experience. And then when I was in first grade, I had measles, I had mumps, I had rubella, I had about every childhood disease that you could get, because that was pre the days when you had immunizations for all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Atlantic City many summers when we were kids, because my grandmother, my mother's mother, owned a hotel in Atlantic City, and Grandma used to go down in the summer to help run the hotel.
And that's Evelyn O'Brien, right?
Yeah, Evelyn Donaldson.
Evelyn Donaldson, and then the grandma's father would have been Thomas O'Brien.
O'Brien, correct.
And his first name was Thomas?
Yes.
Okay.
And we would go down every summer, and Daddy would drive us down, and he'd stay for a week or two, and then he'd go home. And then, because Grandma always had jobs for him to repair at the hotel, and then he would go home and he'd work, and then he'd come back a month later or whatever and collect us all again.
Kind of like when we went to New York for the summers.
Yeah. But, of course, there was, Patrick was a baby. I remember summer in particular when Patrick was a baby because he was crawling around on the boardwalk eating bird turds. And it was a grandma's got, well, I've got, actually, if you want to see, I've got the video. We took all of Grandpa's 8mm tapes, that's what we used to take movies. And one year for Christmas, Tommy John.
Oh, I remember. He made them all into videos.
And he made them all into videos. There's two videos. And you see Patrick crawling down the boardwalk eating bird turds.
So they filmed him but didn't stop.
Yeah, well, no.
Typical Loki.
Grandma keeps taking him away from him, but, you know, he was crawling. So, I mean, it was kind of hard to keep him off the ground. And, of course, there were pigeons all over the place, shitting everywhere. So, there was plenty of dirt. But anyway, we went down, and I believe right after Daddy left, Danny got the measles. And before Danny got over him, Tommy got him. Before Tommy got over him, Eileen and I got him. We ended up spending 6 weeks in Atlantic City because you weren't allowed to travel. And you were supposed to be kept in a dark room. And I remember Grandma giving us one of the hotel rooms. And she had hung army blankets over the windows.
Uh-huh.
And I remember during the day as we all started to feel better, we would jump from bed to bed. And we were probably not the best behaved children in the world. Grandma was never so happy to see us all leave.
Now, what kind of food did you eat when you were there? I mean, regular food, or did you eat hotel food? I mean, was it hotel food like...
No.
It wasn't like going to the Holiday Inn?
Yeah. They didn't have a restaurant, per se. There was a kitchen. And basically, I mean, they only rented rooms. They didn't have any food to go with it. But there was a kitchen, and... Mary Cannon was Grandma's best friend, and she was a widow also. She was a widow. And she was the most marvelous cook in the world. And she was the most unique person that I think I ever knew as a child. When we were there and when she came to visit us in Rochester, she used to get up on Saturday morning and ask each of us what we wanted for breakfast. And she would fix French toast, scrambled eggs, fried eggs, pancakes, whatever anybody wanted, and she would special order it for everyone else.
So what did you get? What would you order?
Oh, I don't really remember, but I can remember if Mary Cannon would come in and she would say, okay, what do you want for breakfast? And what do you want for breakfast? And I mean, we were only kids, and nobody had ever done that before because...
Right.
Basically, with a minimum of 6 and generally 8 to 10 kids is what our house always had. Basically, every morning of the week, you got oatmeal. That was breakfast. There was no choice. That's what we had for breakfast, was oatmeal every morning. Plus, is the reason I still don't like oatmeal. And on Saturday morning, we were allowed to have dry cereal. Grandma would buy 2 boxes of dry cereal a week. And we were allowed dry cereal on Saturday morning.
And that was a treat?
And that was a real treat, yeah, because everybody ate dry cereal except us. We ate oatmeal. But anyway, so that was our big treat on Saturday morning. And then on Sunday morning, Mom would fix bacon and eggs or bacon or sausage and pancakes, whatever. But
a real big breakfast.
That's what everybody ate. But we had our big breakfast on Sunday, and we always got to have orange juice.
You think it orange juice before?
Never had orange juice, except on Sunday.
Huh.
Because it was very expensive.
Uh-huh.
So Mom would buy it once a week. And then she would buy, I think it was 2 packages of chip beef. You know how many chip beef?
Uh-huh. Wouldn't go very far, I imagine.
Well, we would have chip beef sandwiches, you know, during the week, and tuna fish and peanut butter jelly, of course. But she would buy like 2 packages of chip beef And basically, you're only allowed two slices of chicken on your sandwich. So it's basically a mayonnaise.
A bread
sandwich. Well, it was a mayonnaise sandwich with a little, beef flavoring. I distinctly remember that growing up. But, I mean, it's kind of like you guys remember, and I mean, strangely enough, fondly, when Daddy was going to school and I would make swaffles or pancakes or whatever for dinner, and you guys thought it was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was just a way to spread the budget, I don't remember ever having anything like that for dinner, but I remember the very thin chippy sandwiches. And up until I was 10, I would eat peanut butter and jelly, but after that, I never ate peanut butter and jelly again in my life.
Why?
Because my brothers and I had a contest. We had been out in the woods building a fort, and it was a hot, hot summer day, and then we played a ball game, and I was the only girl in the neighborhood that was allowed to play ball, because I could play as good as the boys.
Uh-huh.
None of the other girls.
Now, baseball, or?
Baseball, softball, baseball, whatever. We played in the street. That was the days when Holmes Road was a country road, and there was hardly any traffic.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like your road. There was nobody on it but people who lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And all the kids played ball in the street. But anyway, and of course, the whole area behind Grandma's all the way to Ridge Road was woods.
Wow.
There were no houses.
That's hard to even imagine.
Yeah, it was a whole lot different. And the area from Apollo Drive all the way down past the school, that was nothing but woods.
No, Apollo Drive was there?
Apollo Drive was there, and the houses on Apollo, but after you passed the first house on Apollo, going down
Holmes Road.
That was all fields.
And what about Latona Road where Aunt Evie was? Was that always houses, or did they build those after?
That was a mix of houses and forests
fields
and undeveloped lots.
Okay.
But some of them were there. I don't think Evelyn's house or several of them were there, but there were some along there. But anyway, after playing this ball game, and like I said, it was a very hot summer day, and I think we had drank about 15 gallons of water, and we came in and we had a contest on who could eat the most peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, because we were all starving, and I tried to keep up with my brothers, and I puked for 3 hours peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
That would do me in.
And I've never had a desire for peanut butter and jelly sandwich the rest of my life. I still can't eat it.
What would you say your favorite food is?
Probably steak.
Any kind of steak? Filet mignon, round steak, flank steak?
Sirloin.
And what's your favorite vegetable?
Asparagus.
Spinach salad?
Spinach salad, too. That and asparagus, probably. As far as salads are concerned, probably spinach salad.
Favorite dessert? Creme brulee, what am I asking?
Yeah,
I know that.
Yeah.
Favorite cookie?
Chocolate chip.
Favorite restaurant?
Venom's.
Favorite color?
Blue.
Well, duh, everything in your house is blue.
No, it's not.
Well, now it's not. It used to be blue or brown.
Definitely. Yeah, I branched out. I got peach. Our bedroom's green.
Living room screen. Gosh, I didn't know better. I think green was your favorite color. Hold on, I'm gonna turn the light on for a second. What school did you go to? You went to Catholic school, didn't you?
Oh, Catholic school.
So was that school on Holmes Road on? Was that there?
No.
Oh, it wasn't there anyways.
No.
Okay.
To St. John the Evangelist school. Which is the building in front of the big church?
The piano sales place now, or whatever. Cell phone.
Old church.
Oh!
This was the old church. That's where we went when we were kids.
Okay.
They didn't build the big church until the year Daddy and I got married, 1968. So all the years I was growing up, we went to that little stone church.
Uh huh.
And next to it, right next to it, is the school. That was the school I went to, kindergarten through eighth grade.
Okay. Who is your favorite teacher?
I haven't got a clue.
Any teachers that really made a difference in your life?
My seventh grade. None that taught seventh grade. And in college, Sister Virginis.
Why did you like the nun in seventh grade? What did she do for you? I mean, that made her cool, made her stand out.
Well, probably it was the first time in my life where I wasn't Tommy John's shadow.
What do you mean?
Well, my whole life I followed Tommy through school.
Which was a burden in itself.
Yep. So the minute I would walk, and of course I went to, I mean, it was a small school. And, of course, everybody knew everybody. I mean, it'd be like going to Bethel, except it was even smaller. And basically, the minute the name Loki came up, I was in the front seat. Lokis went to the front seat after following Tommy, and I always had to, with every new teacher, I had to prove myself, because Tommy was such a troublemaker that, you know, just automatic, if there was another Loki, it must be a troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, Danny was 3 years ahead of me.
Right.
So Danny was never a problem in school, but then, you know, that faded. I mean, he was just an average, you know, get along with everybody type of kid. And, but everybody in the school knew Tommy John.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a teacher that didn't know Tommy John and hadn't had some type of confrontation with Tommy John. Probably my worst experience ever in school was in kindergarten, where basically there was some kind of commotion in the classroom, and I don't remember now what it was, but basically, since it was relatively new and I had to follow Tommy John, there was a commotion, and I got blamed for the commotion. And being the independent little cuss that I was, and 5 years of age, basically the nun said, you know, okay, Loki, you know, you have to go sit in the corner, or you have to whatever, go to the cloakroom, or whatever. I was being punished, and I said, I didn't do it. And they said, don't give me any lip. And this was the nuns of those days. And I said, I'm not taking a punishment for what I didn't do. It was a big five-year-old here. And the nun grabbed me by the hand and dragged me back to the coat room. And I guess she was going to give me a ration of some sort. So I bit her hand because she was my own thing. So
did you ask her nicely 3 times?
No. I just bit her hand, and naturally she let go of me. And I grabbed my coat, and I went running out of the classroom, and I went running down Ridge Road. I knew where I thought I was going, but I was going. Well, of course, they went to first grade, and they got Tommy John. And they sent Tommy John running down Ridge Road after me.
See?
And, of course, in this day and age, Ridge Road was a two-lane road.
Uh-huh.
With sidewalk on both sides, and no commercial buildings, no malls, no... Not that morning, it was modern suburbia. So anyway, of course, Tommy John grabbed me by the hair and dragged me back to school. And then the nun and I sat down and had a conversation, and she basically said that she had kind of jumped the gun, and because of Tommy, they thought I was a troublemaker. And I guess in the meantime, with all of this commotion, the kid that had started the commotion basically faced up to it because of all that was going on.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, the nun apologized to me, and, you know, I was my father's daughter. I had my hands in the head, my hips, and I didn't do anything wrong. And, I mean, I was perfectly justified here. So, of course, I think, and I got on the bus, you know, whatever, and we only went half day kindergarten, and we went home. And all the way home, Eileen cried. Because she was afraid that I was going to be in trouble with Mom and Dad. And I said, Eileen, just shut up and we don't say anything. Got everything worked out with her sister, wants her jobs. And, you know, it is, you know, we don't need to discuss it. Well, of course, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Tommy John comes home from school. And the first thing out of his mouth when he comes running in the door was, "Mary been the teacher." And he got beat for lying. Because I was a perfect child. I had never created any commotion. I had never had any problem with anybody. And I certainly would not have done anything like that. And nobody asked me. So, I mean, I didn't lie.
Uh-huh.
But I also didn't speak up and say what happened. And I made him cry. Why didn't he just kept crying? And Tommy John just kept insisting that he wasn't lying. So my mother picked up the phone and she called the nun. And then she got them in the store. So Tommy got a beating for nothing.
Did you get beat?
Nope.
Oh, no wonder Tommy
came back. Well, I said some of Tommy's hang-ups were justified. But he carried them to extreme.
Right. So what about this nun in seventh grade?
Well, in seventh grade, I went into the classroom. She was a heavy-set woman. I don't remember her name. And, of course, wore the big hat and whatnot. So I really can't remember what they looked like. But, I mean, she was a big lady. And basically, I was treated like all the other kids. I had the second seat from the back. I had never sat that far back in a classroom in my life. And she treated me as an individual person.
Uh-huh.
And for my own do's or don'ts or whatever you want to say. And it was the first time ever in school.
Had she not had Tommy, or was she just more
fair? She had not had Tommy. She was a new nun. She was new to that school. She didn't know Tommy John. So it was the first time where I ever started off on my own, and not as Tommy's shadow. And I guess that's why she probably stands out more than anybody else.
And what about Sister Virginie's?
Sister Virginie's was the music teacher at Villa Maria College. And I chose to go to Villa Maria College. I was accepted there, and I was accepted at Alfred College, either of which I could have gone to. Villa Maria and Alfred were about equal distance, one way or the other. Alfred was towards Syracuse. And basically, I wanted to be an elementary school teacher.
I never knew that.
Yep. Well, when I was 15, I told my parents I wanted to be an airline stewardess when I grew up. And my parents were horrified. And my father said, "I don't want you to be an airline stewardess. Everybody that goes on a plane dies."
Well, there's Grandpa being an optimist again.
Well, Grandpa had never been in an airplane. And airplane travel at that time was not very popular.
Uh-huh.
And it was very expensive. I mean, most people did not fly. And when I was 10, for my 10th birthday, that was probably my most memorable birthday. For my 10th birthday, Aunt Rose and Uncle Norbert bought me an airplane ticket to fly from Rochester to Buffalo over a 12-minute flight.
What a treat.
To fly.
Right.
And I flew to Buffalo, and I spent the weekend with Rose and Norbert, and they drove me back to Rochester on Sunday.
That was back when you could buy a one-way ticket.
But that was probably my most exciting birthday. And that and my 16th birthday. My 16th birthday I spent in Amarillo, Texas with my mother's three stepsisters, Aunt Joan, Bobby, and Hashka.
Stepsisters. Are those Dick's?
Dick's sisters.
Sisters. Half sisters.
No, Dick's real sisters.
Well, I thought
when
that.
Velma Donaldson married Paul Donaldson. Paul had five children. He had Dip and Dick, Joan, Bobby. I'm sorry, Joan, Bobby, and Nancy. Well,
I always thought Uncle Dick was like Paul and Evelyn's brother. I thought they had a son together.
No.
Who was Grandma's brother?
Uncle Tommy.
Okay, I always get Uncle Tommy confused. And he died relatively young.
48.
Of?
Lung cancer.
Okay.
But, for my 16th birthday, Alice loaned me the money.
Grandma Alice?
Grandma Alice loaned me the money to go to Texas with Joanne for 6 weeks. Joanne wanted to go to Texas, and she wanted to go on the train. And Alice didn't want her to go by herself. She was 15, I was 15 going on 16. Because I'm a year older than Joanne. So we got on the train, and we went to Houston, where her grandmother lived.
That's so, Margaret?
Margaret.
Okay.
And we went to Houston, and we spent a month with Margaret in Houston, and we had a wonderful, wonderful time. Margaret was wonderful to us. She took us crabbing in the Gulf.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I had one of her big straw hats on, because she was worried about me getting sunburned.
Uh-huh.
And the hat blew off, and I did a lifesaver jump off a pier to save the hat in 2 feet of water. And I tore up all the tendons and ligaments in my right knee. That's why I still have trouble with my knee.
I didn't know that.
I was almost 16. So, of course, she took me to emergency because my knee immediately got larger than my thigh.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on crutches and basically came home with this wrap and all this crap in my knee. My mother was thrilled. But anyway, I left after a month. Joanne stayed the other 2 weeks with her grandma, and I took the train up to Amarillo.
Uh-huh.
And spent 2 weeks I stayed with Aunt Joan, and her daughter, Susie, who I guess would be a cousin of some sort.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, but her daughter, Susie, was like 2 years older than me, or 3 years older. And she was so cool. I mean, you know, I was 15 when I was 16, and she was. And she got me my first date. This guy paused. It was horrible. And that's what we did for my 16th birthday. During the day, Joan and Aunt Joan, and I forget his name. They took Susie and I to the country club, and we went swimming in the pool, and then they took me out on the putting green because they were all big golfers.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they belonged to the club. I mean, it was like a really different kind of life than I ever had.
Uh-huh.
And our puppy was just so cool. And Susie was 19, and she wanted to be with me. Just wonderful. I mean, I felt like the most important person in the world. And then we're out on the putting green, and after about 5 minutes, I said, this is the most boring damn thing I've ever seen. You just stand here and look all around the bubbles.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you in the pool. So I went to the pool. But anyway, Susie took me out on my first day. And do you remember that red taffeta dress that you guys used to wear in play?
Uh-huh, with a petticoat
Susie
thing.
Susie sent me that dress. That was one of her prom dresses. And she quit going to proms and whatnot. She mailed me that dress.
Oh,
she
how
thought
cool.
It was so cool. And I did wear it to a school dance.
Uh-huh.
So that's where that red taffeta dress came from.
Huh.
But anyway, that was probably, those were probably the highlight birthdays. Like I said, birthdays were always a family affair, but those were the ones that probably stand out.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, when I was 15 and I said I wanted to be an airline stewardess, my parents were horrified. And my mother said, I don't want you to go be an airline stewardess because you'll marry somebody, you'll meet somebody from Timbuktu, you'll get married, and you'll never live in Rochester. So the moral of the story is I married the boy next door and I've never lived in Rochester.
Would you move back to Rochester now if you could? I mean...
You know, Daddy and I came to the conclusion 20 years ago when we were in Washington that Ohio was our home. Besides, I would never move away from you three.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'll never move to Florida or move anywhere else always have this house. I mean, we'll travel and, you know, we might go to Florida for 2 or 3 months, a year or whatever, but as long as you guys are in the Ohio area and these kids are growing up, I want to be a part of their lives. It's very important to me to be the kind of grandma to your children that my mother has always been to you. And I want them to grow up and want to be with me and love me and know that I love them and I care about them, and they're important. I think that there's nothing more valuable in a child's life than to know that they're important. And it builds their self-confidence and their character.
Mm-hmm.
To know that somebody older has that much interest in them and what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I never had that in grandparents. My grandmother died, my mother's mother, when I was 12 years old. And, I mean, she was probably the best because she enjoyed us because she didn't see us that often. She didn't enjoy us when we stayed too long. But my other grandmother was never the grandmothering type. I mean, she was
great grandma, Loki.
She was with us. She would take care of us when mom and dad would go on a trip. But it was like, it was a job. It was a chore. It was something she had to do.
Uh-huh.
It was never like she wanted to be with us. In my whole life, the only time she was ever tender or said anything that meant anything to me was when I was 16. And she went to some box up in the room over the garage. She was living with us at that time. She lived with us off and on throughout my childhood. And she got out that ring, her wedding ring, which she never wore. I mean, I never saw her. She went to that box and she got out the wedding ring and she handed it to me. And she said, I want you to have this. And that was it. It was like, that was the only tender thing she ever said to me. Then, and when I was 18 years old and the senior prom was coming up, and I had seen some magazine that Kathy or Joanne got, because we never got those glamour magazines or any of that kind of stuff. And in one of these magazines, I had seen this pink satin strapless gown, perfectly plain, but gorgeous. I mean, so plain it was just elegant, and I loved the style. And I saw this dress, and it was, oh, some exorbitant amount of money, like $75, something outrageous like that. I mean,
right,
back
for the
that
time.
Many years ago, I was 16, 40 years ago. And anyway, I had said something to my mother about the dress. I really, really wanted the dress, and, you know, Mom said, you know, we can't afford it, and I had to save money for school, and of course by then I still owed Alice money. I had a job, but, you know, I was like my mother, you know, I was in debt before I got the job. You know, I already garnished my wages, because I had promised Alice when I came back from Texas I would get a job, and I would pay her back so much a week until I had paid back whatever I borrowed, and I don't remember the amount of money. So the next thing I know, Grandma picked up the magazine. Said, take me down to Newsbaum's. Newsbaum's was a Jewish man who was probably 110 all his life. But anyway, this little Jewish guy, and I set it on the top here, right?
No, turn it on the top. Yeah, and then you set it on the bottom.
That's the
top. Yeah, he was after that. I wonder if it's an ambulance.
But anyway, she said, we're going to Newsbaum's. And it was the worst junk store I've ever been in my life. It was in one of the old buildings in downtown Rochester in a nasty neighborhood, as I'm saying. And it was a skinny store with very, very high ceilings. And he had bolts of material stacked on top of bolts of material. He used to go get a ladder, not a ladder like that you open and it goes like this, but a ladder that you lean up against to go get material down if you wanted to look at some material. I mean, it was the most bizarre place I've ever seen in my life.
And was
Oh, it was material, it was threads, buttons,
any kind of sewing
type stuff. But I mean, it was just stacked in heaps and bins. I mean, sort of looked like downtown Dayton Day.
Uh-huh.
And there were skinny little aisles that you could, you know, zigzag through that. I mean, there was no room for a cart or anything like that. It was the most bizarre place in the world. And anyway, so grandma sent you one of these boxes. And that's what mom was doing. She wanted the material. So we went to these boxes. Grandma used to always look at the material. She'd do this. And you had to feel it. You had to have the right feel. Doesn't she find in that place, and God only knows how the hell she could find it, a bolt of pink satin material. The same pink as was in the dress in the picture. And she bought the material, and she bought a pattern. Or maybe she didn't buy a pattern. Maybe she just made it without a pattern. Because I remember her fitting me and fitting me and fitting me. And when she got the dress finished, she made me a white lace jacket to wear over it, a short boxy jacket, because that was popular back then, because we were going to the Nazareth dance, which was a Catholic school, and you weren't allowed to wear a strapless dress. So this way I could wear the dress, but
with
I could wear the little jacket over it, and therefore, you know, it would be appropriate for, you know.
Now, did you go to this dance with Daddy?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a picture.
Yeah, I know the picture. I couldn't remember if it was Dad that was that you were with.
When Grandma finished the dress and the night of the dance, and I got dressed up in the dress, it was the only time in my life I ever saw my grandmother tender and loving. She looked at me, and tears rolled down her face, and she held my hand, and she said, "This is the problem I never went to." And she said, "You look just like I did when I was 18 years old." And that was the only nice thing my grandmother ever said. That, you know, I mean, Grandma was just not a person like Grandma.
Like Grandpa, yeah.
You know, where she couldn't express her emotions. And I mean, it was like, I think it's a Loki hang-up, but I guess maybe it was a Gowan
hang-up.
But it was like, it was a weakness to show tenderness or love or express any of that outwardly. But that's probably my most memorable memory of my grandmother. And at that moment, I knew that she really did care.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it kind of put a different slant on things.
She wasn't just a crazy, batty old woman.
Oh, yeah, when she used to take care of us, her mom and dad would go away, and Twink had the pet rats, Muldoons, and he would let them out in the morning and let them scoot around and let them sit on the back of the bench in the kitchen, and he'd feed them Hershey Kisses. They would hold it with their little paws and gnaw on the thing. I mean, Muldoon was adorable if you didn't have to look at that tail. That tail, you understand that long.
That was the mouse's name?
The rat.
Muldoon.
And then you'd forget. Muldoon would get down and be scooting around the kitchen. And Grandma would go get a broom and slap him across the and Twink would have to go rescue Muldoon.
Did you guys have dogs growing up?
Oh, we always had dogs. Always had dogs, and we always had cats. Usually only one at a time. And every cat we ever had was Mr. Chip. Didn't make any difference. what name the cat had. Grandpa called him Mr. Shitter. And we all called him Mr. Shitter. Well, they were all Mr. Shitters.
Did you have your own pet, like, that was just yours, or?
I had two goldfish.
You don't seem like a goldfish kind of girl.
I wasn't. But I won them at the church carnival. I won two goldfish, and I somehow earned the money babysitting or something to buy the goldfish home. Well, I was 10. 10 was a very traumatic age. I was 10, and I had these two goldfish, and I was very proud of them because it was the first animals, creatures, or whatever, that were just mine.
Uh-huh.
Not that I was wild about fish.
But, right, but you know, they were yours.
What was I going to do with them, you know? So I bought the bowl, and I bought the food, and so on and so forth. Well, I didn't have little buggers a week, and the first one showed up belly up one morning. Well, I was just devastated that this fish died. And, of course, I got the fish out, and I put him in a little box, and I brought him out. And, of course, my father was digging up the septic system in the front yard. I think he did that every other summer when we were kids.
Really?
Oh, God. They always had trouble with the septic system.
On Helms Road?
On Helms Road. It's in the front yard under that pretty little flower thing that with the pump and all that.
Yeah.
That was the septic system. But I think it was a matter of having it pumped or something. I don't know if you had to dig it up. I don't know. I mean, I was only 10 years old. I mean, eventually they went to sewers, you know, Greece did.
Right.
But I mean, Greece was damn rural when I was growing up.
Right.
I mean, I'm still amazed every time I go down Bridge Road. But anyway, I went out, and of course, my father, it was a very hot summer day, and my father's, you know, sweat all over the place and taking up the septic system, and I'm crying. I cried for hours. Well, of course, I think it was the next day or the day after the other one showed up belly up. So, and the fish. So I took that little booger and I put him in a little cardboard jewelry box, and I dug a grave on the far side of the house where nobody ever went, you know, where the grass doesn't grow.
Uh-huh.
Over there on the far side of the living room.
Uh-huh.
And I dug a grave and I had a burial ceremony.
Just you and your fish?
It was George and, what was the other one? I can't remember, but the one I buried was George. I had my own little ceremony, and I didn't tell my father or anybody else. And then I gave the goldfish bowl away, and I didn't have no more fish.
Fish are highly overrated.
Yeah, that's what I decided. That's why I still don't like fish.
Yeah.
Just didn't get to that fish that no one can eat, but, you know, there's no wild about it. Cuts.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, your nickname.
Tommy John was the king of nicknames. And nobody could just go by their own name. Nobody in the neighborhood, nobody that Tommy was ever involved with, everybody had a name. And Twink was called. Twink's name came from, he has very long, skinny feet. And back in them days, you wore canvas high-top tennis shoes.
Right.
There was no, like, tennis shoes today. The canvas high-top tennis shoes. And if you wanted to see something funny, the feet were about this long, and then these canvas things that came up the side, and then Twink walked real funny. So he got the name Twinkle Toes. That's how
Tommy named him.
Tommy named him. Tommy was always given somebody. And then in retaliation, I guess you would say, Danny started calling Tommy Junk. He said he was Junk. So that's how he got the name Junk.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, I was named Governor. The two of them decided that because I always wanted to run everything. They had decided, so I was the governor. That's how I got that name from Tommy and Dan. And then Mike, I forget why he was called Feedy.
Don't
know. I don't remember.
And it's feety, like...
Like feet.
Oh, feet.
Feet.
I always thought it was feety, like feeding your face.
No.
Feety. Feety. Okay.
Like an
Uh-huh.
But I don't know why, if it had to do with...
Did he have stinky feet?
I don't know. I can't remember why Tommy did that last week. And then Patrick...
Wait.
This is to go no further. I got beat
for that one. Sir Joe did. Calling him that.
Don't ever call him that. But he got called Stiff Brown because he browned his pants a lot. That's why he doesn't like him. Then Evelyn got called Taurus. Like in the bull.
Uh huh.
But she didn't like that, so then they called her Boris. Which meant the same thing, but other people didn't know it was Taurus when they called it Taurus. But where Tommy came up with this, I haven't got a clue. I mean...
And where did Thunderbags come from?
Oh, that was Twink.
Okay.
Because she always thundered around. And the bags came from, on their honeymoon. Carol had a Chrysler convertible when they got married.
Uh-huh.
And they went on their honeymoon in this Chrysler convertible. Because it was much newer than whatever the hell Twink was driving. Some antique, you know, that he had rebuilt the engine.
I'm sure.
Not. But anyway, when they went on their honeymoon, Carol had 15 bags. She had two hat boxes. She had the little, what do you call it, compact case.
Uh-huh.
The little suitcases like the ones they used to make that match with the
uh-huh.
ones and they were for your compact. She had a whole suitcase of nothing but nightgowns and lingerie and stuff like that. She had another suitcase with, I guess, regular clothes in it. And she had a suitcase with dress clothes in it and God knows whatever. And she had like 15 bags, and from that day forward, we called her bags. Bags. And then, of course, after they were married a while, and I mean, he would aggravate her, and I mean, she would sound like Thunder when she was wrong. Thus is how she became a Thunderbags.
And Aunt Margot's Queenie?
Queenie. Tommy's always called her Queenie, because he said she was his queen. So, I mean, that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he calls her Queenie.
And Aunt Marie, what was hers? She had a name. Oh, she had a name. It wasn't a very nice name, though. I can't remember what it was. Mike had a name for her.
That wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure he had several.
Let me see what else I had on my list that I was supposed to add. This is much better just talking. It's not too bad, is it? You don't remember your being recorded. All right. What was your favorite movie?
Probably anything with Rock Hudson and Doris Day. It was like Pillow Talk, and it was like a whole series of Rock Hudson and Doris Day movies.
Huh. I don't know that I've ever seen this.
And I remember going to Gone with the Wind when they recreated that. I remember that. The big thing in Rochester was
Sound of Music?
No, the one where she was a street gutter person. And
Mary Poppins?
No, and Rex Harris for Harrison on a bat.
Oh,
taught her to speak and...
My Fair Lady?
My Fair Lady. That was the big, big attraction in Rochester, probably, I was 17, 18 years old. And there was a brand new movie theater built at Dewey Avenue and Ridge Road.
Uh-huh.
And it was gorgeous, and it had the big screen, and that's where it was playing. And I mean, you had to order tickets. It wasn't like you just went to the movie theater. and your father ordered chickens for us to go. And for he and I and his mother.
Oh, this is a romantic.
So anyway, and then it ended up at that time he was working part-time at a liquor store. And because he'd come home from college, it was his freshman year, I guess. And he ended up having to work over, and we couldn't go to the movies. So he sent Len Korn, who was there visiting, so he sent Len Korn to come get me and take me to the movies.
With his mother?
His mother ended up not going. So Len took me to, and Len asked me to dump Daddy and walk in.
He always seemed like a sleep.
It was a very memorable week.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were a year behind Dad in school because you were so sick in first grade, right? You got held back that year because you missed.
I missed like more than half of the number of days you had to go. I think you had to go 180 days, and I missed like 100 of them.
Oh, wow.
I did pass first grade.
Uh-huh.
Eileen and I both passed first grade, but we barely passed first grade.
And Eileen got held back too?
Eileen got held back too, yeah. It was Mother's and Peggy's decision.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, the school said, legally, we met the criteria to go to second grade. But they said that we would struggle the rest of our life in school,
mm-hmm,
because we missed the foundation, the reading, the math, the minor math, and all of that stuff, which, of course, by second grade, you build on those skills.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have the skills. So they said we would struggle, so they highly recommended that we repeat first grade.
Uh-huh.
And that way, you know, we wouldn't have to struggle so hard.
Uh-huh.
So
now, would you say Eileen was your best friend growing up, or
yes.
Joanne?
No, Eileen. Eileen lived with us from the time we were 2 years old, and Eileen and I were exactly the same age. I mean, we're 2 months apart.
Uh-huh.
Eileen lived with us day and night, 7 days a week, from the time she was 2 until we were 11.
Wow.
So for 9 years, Eileen and I shared a bedroom,
mm-hmm,
and we did everything together, and anything Peggy bought her, she bought me.
Mm-hmm.
Anything my grandmother gave me, she gave Eileen.
Mm-hmm.
And Eileen was treated just like she was
part of the family.
My sister.
Uh-huh.
And we were very, very close. And I mean, we shared so many things together. And then when Peggy married Sam is when Eileen left and went and lived with Peggy and Sam.
That must have been awfully hard on Eileen. I mean, was that what Eileen wanted, or?
Well, she wanted to be with her mother, and I mean, Peggy wanted to be with her. But see, Peggy was a waitress.
Uh-huh.
And bartender and that type of thing. So she worked nights.
Uh-huh.
And the problem was, you know, what do you do with a kid?
Right.
You know, at night. So, and back in those days, childcare, daycare, whatever you want to call it,
didn't
was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mother's kids were all like foster children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were there all the time. It wasn't like they went home every night.
Right.
And then when Peggy would get on binges and drink too much or get some type of emotion or whatever, she would lose her apartment and then she'd come live with us too. I mean, we had a lot of people that lived with us. Grandpa lived with us off and on. Uncle Tommy, Grandma's brother, lived with us off and on. His friend Bobby Vaught lived with us at times. And then there were many times when we were growing up where Grandma rented the room over the garage. They had it set up like an apartment.
Uh-huh.
And she rented it to single women with children.
Huh.
There was a woman named Amy, and she had a little girl and a little boy. Janine Yulo, I don't know if you remember Grandma ever talking about Janine. But Janine lived with us, and her mother lived with us for a while. I mean,
it's like a whole different kind of life than
yeah.
I can even imagine. I mean, you know, we had our house and we lived in it, and people would come to visit, but then they always went home.
But you see, Grandma grew up that way.
Yeah.
And what Grandma would do, it was an income.
Uh-huh.
She would rent the room over the garage, and it was an income. It would make a car payment or a mortgage payment or, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that was the way Grandma grew up. She rented a room or whatever, and that was a lifestyle that, you know, people accepted. I mean, it was, like I said, a lot different.
Well, I imagine, too. I mean, now I can't imagine, like, letting anybody into my home. I mean, there's so many trust issues and that kind of thing. It's like, gosh, I can't even imagine.
Well, see, back then, everybody just trusted everybody. I mean, you know, I'm sure there were shysters out there, but I don't think they were quite as prevalent as they are today. Or at least we didn't know about it or whatever. But, I mean, Grandma did it all the time. It was kind of like Daddy and I with rental properties, except that people live with them.
Yeah, they're not in your house.
But, you know, Grandma would take care of the kids. It was a way to make money. And then, you know, when the people needed a place to stay to, she'd rent them.
Come visit your kids and live with us.
Yeah, live with us.
Why don't you tell me how you and Dad met? Give me your version of the story. I love this story.
I was going...
Well, wait. Okay, yeah, I was going to say, tell me. Go ahead.
I think we're going to have one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got the time.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you big slacker. You want me to get it?
No.
It costs $20.
No, there should be two singles
in
the front.
I was saying, me getting into your wallet is going to cost you $20. Okay, we just come through the toll booth in Buffalo. Here's your wallet back, Mom.
Oh.
Okay, so anyways.
So anyways, I had dated a lot of people by the time I was 17, but never dated anybody that I really was wild about. I mean, had a good time, and that was good enough, but I wasn't really wild about anybody. And I was, when I went to work at Star Market, grocery store.
Was that your first job outside of babysitting?
No, I worked, as soon as I came back from Texas, I got a job at Buckman's. You know, the donut place where
uh-huh.
you have a place of donuts. Except it was a donut shop and an ice cream shop. And I went to work there. That was my very first job other than babysitting. And my second job was at the grocery store. That's where I really wanted to go to work, but they didn't have any jobs available at the time I needed to start paying Alice back.
Were you a cashier or a stock person or?
No, I sold donuts and I spent a summer making ice cream. That's why I don't like ice cream. That's why I still don't like ice cream. I made, yeah, they made all their own ice cream.
Ugh.
I made all the ice cream that summer and then scooped the shell. And it was probably at least 15 years before I could even look at ice cream again. Was never real wild about it to begin with, but then I basically disliked it.
Uh-huh.
And then I worked, I got tired of the ice cream thing, and then they opened up a meatpacking area in the back. They built the lower level in the back, the lower level.
Uh-huh.
And I worked in there, I think I lasted a week.
Oh, I can't imagine doing that.
Then Gus Disler, who was the owner, runner, or whatever, of the Star Supermarket down at, what was it, Ridge and Latona, actually. And he called my mother and said that they had a job for me, that if I worked half as good as Twink did, that I had a job. So that's how I got into the Star
So Twink worked there before.
Twink worked there and was a stock boy and so on, and he was just such a good hard worker that they were more than willing to take another look. So I went there as a cashier.
Uh-huh.
And I met and fell in love with the guy of my dreams, Nick. He was 6'2" or 3", blue eyes, brown hair, and he wore his hair kind of longy in the front and kind of hung over his forehead, and it did DA in the back, duck's ass. That's what they called it, and it was a very cool style back in 1963. So anyway, I just was goo-goo-eyed over this guy. It was the first guy I ever really felt for, and I just thought he was so cool, and we went out for 3 or 4 months, and nobody in my family liked him, especially my brothers. And I didn't find out until probably, 10 years later, that my brothers had gotten rid of a lot of my dates. But nobody bothered to tell me. My brothers and their friends, they had scared off 3 guys already at that point, which I didn't know. I mean, they just disappeared, but like I said, I never really cared, so it wasn't a big deal. But anyway, I was absolutely wild about Nick. And one day he walked in to work, and he said to me, "I want my ring back." And it was like, devastating. And we hadn't had any argument, nothing had happened, and I couldn't understand what the problem was. And he wouldn't discuss it, he just said he wanted his ring back. Of course, 10 years later, I found out that my brothers had met him in the parking lot the night before, and they basically told him that if he came within 5 feet of him, they would smash his 57 Chevy. Which was the coolest car you could own.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously, he cared more about his car than he did me. So, that was the story. But I didn't know this.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, I was just absolutely devastated. And, of course, I was 16, 17 years old. I moped, which 16, 17 year olds do very well.
Uh-huh.
And I moped around for about a week, and anytime anybody looked at me, I cried, and I moped, and I cried, and I moped. When I was home, I was okay when I was elsewhere, but of course when I was home,
uh-huh,
everybody else had to be miserable too. It was part of the plan. I just don't want to use it. So anyway, mother couldn't stand it anymore. She had enough of my moping and wailing and crying. So she called Eileen, and she said to Eileen, "I don't care what you do, I don't care how you do it, but get Mary the hell out of the house and get her to meet somebody. Can you find somebody, a date or something?" Well, of course, you know, I was 17 years old, and I'd never had trouble getting a date. So anyway, next thing I know, Eileen calls me, and she said, "Oh, we're having this sorority party out at her high school in Webster. You know, it's November, and it's just going to be marvelous. We're going on this hayride, and it's going to be just a real blast. And, you know, would I come?" Because Bill had this friend who didn't know anybody and really needed to meet somebody. And you know, would really like to meet me. And she knew that I broke up with Nick and so on and so forth. So this is like...
And you didn't know that Grandma had put her up?
No. That I mean, and I were very close still. So anyway, I said, "Well, okay, you know, if somebody doesn't have a date, you're hard pressed, whatever." So anyway, she calls me. This is Sunday. She calls me on Monday. There's going to be Louie somebody. Well, she calls me on Tuesday, and there's not going to be Louie. Now it's going to be Dick somebody. And then on Wednesday, it's somebody else. Well, by Thursday, she calls me. I said, "Eileen, not going. I'm not that hard pressed. I can get my own day. You know, Bill doesn't have this friend." I said, "Obviously, nobody wants to take a chance on meeting some stranger and being stuck with them all."
Right. Now, is this Bill that she ultimately married?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he's not the guy she married at all. This Bill,
was your best man?
No. No. You've never met this guy.
Oh, okay.
Bill Hewley.
And he was, he played football with your father at once.
Okay.
And he and Eileen had gone out since they were freshmen in high school. I mean, they went out for like 4 years. And then they broke up. I don't know what happened. But anyway, and I don't know where she met the jerk that she married, Patrick. But anyway, I have no idea when he came on the scene or where. But I mean, she'd only known him. She couldn't have known him more than a year and a half before they got married. But anyhow, so, you know, I said, Eileen, I'm not going. She said, all right. She said, how about we don't do a date? She said, we've got some odd guys, and we got more guys than we do girls. She said, would you just come and be one of the girls, you know, so that, you know, if we dance or whatever, you know, you kind of pair off as couples or whatever. She said, and you don't have to be anybody's date. So I said, okay, if that's the situation, then that's what we'll do. Of course, in the meantime, what had happened was Bill was given orders by Lane to get me a date.
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess, you know, he could make these arrangements, and then people thought, well, blind date, better not do this, but not do this, so they backed off. Well, it was Saturday afternoon, and Bill still had no money. The party was Saturday night, and he called your father up, and basically, Daddy had no plans because his mom and dad were supposed to be going to this big charity ball that cost like $50 a person or a couple or something. And in 1963, that was a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
This big charity ball that his dad really wanted to go to. But granddad had a case of gout, which is like an inflammation in your toes, in your feet. And she couldn't get any shoes on. Well, he couldn't very well go in and talk to a formal affair with no shoes.
Uh-huh.
So Dick Penno was another one of your father's very good friends in high school. And Dick Penno's dad ran a tuck shop. So Daddy and Granddad went to the tuck shop, and Dad Penno said, I'll give you a tux for Jim, and I'll give you a tux for Granddad. And, I'll charge you for one tux, and whoever wears it, that's the one I'll charge you for, but I'll give you both. Because Dad really wanted to go, but Jim was told if Dad didn't go, he wasn't wasting this $100,
that
Jim would take his mother, you know, to the affair.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, Saturday afternoon, like at 3 o'clock or whatever, Dad really wanted to go. And he took a razor, and he sliced one of his shoes to release the pressure, and he was able to get the shoe on.
Uh-huh.
So he ended up going. So, but this decision was made like at 3 o'clock or whatever on Saturday afternoon. Well, by 4 o'clock, of course, Bill Ewing
is desperately.
Is desperate. So, of course, he's calling everybody on the football team, anybody that he knows that isn't going with somebody. So, of course, he calls Daddy, and he says, you know, we got this situation. We got too many girls and not enough guys. By this point, he wasn't saying to anybody blind date. So he said, you know, we just need to balance out the guys. You know, we got too many girls. So anyway, he said, you know, what are you doing? Well, he said, you know, now I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to hang out with my sister. Patty was 12 at the time. And he said, I'm just going to hang out with Patty because, you know, mom and dad really don't want her home alone. Well, anyway, he said, you know, is there anything you can get rid of your sister or whatever? So anyway, Daddy said, you know, the Blondes lived next door, and there were 9 kids there. And Patty, one of them was Patty's age anyway. I mean, she was real close to him. So they went running over to Blondes.
Good night.
They went running over to Blondes, and of course, Blondes said, sure, Patty can stay here. So anyway, Bill says, well, you know, I'll pick you up at, I don't know, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever. Son of a bitch, and it doesn't start snowing to beat the band on about 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And it's just coming down and coming down. It's like it's never going to end. So anyway, it ends up that for some reason, Bill didn't pick Daddy up. He was supposed to get him. But Aunt Peggy came to get him in this big Chrysler. And of course, Daddy didn't know who the hell she was. She came to the door. door and said, you know, where the hell's
yeah, there's Peggy ever.
Peggy. Very abrupt. And I guess Eileen was with her.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, he met Eileen and, you know, look, he came out and he got in the car and Peggy looked at him right away and she said, they'll make a great couple. And he said, all the way to Webster, he kept thinking, what's she talking about, you know? I'm just balancing out, you know, the number of people I don't know what she's talking about. Well, I guess by the time they got to Eileen's house, Bill was there and so on, then he got the real scoop of what had happened all week long. Which, of course, I still didn't know. So, of course, then my father says, I can't have the car because it's snowing too bad, the roads are too bad. So he'll drive me to Webster. Because, I mean, Webster was not exactly
right
corner from the bridge. So, anyway, Daddy's driving, and we get out there, and, of course, we come in to Aunt Peggy's front door, and son of a bitch, goddamn snow. The roads stink, and so on and so forth. And of course, Daddy's standing there. Of course, never hears this kind of language at home.
Uh-huh.
And he's standing there with this giant bowl of ice cream. I have never seen a bigger bowl of ice cream. And of course, he's dressed very conservatively. Of course, up to this point, I had dated guys that were in a motorcycle club. I was in a motorcycle club with Tommy John from the time I was 16 until I was 17 and a half, until Tommy shattered every bone in his leg from an accident, and then I never have been on a motorcycle since. But anyway, Tommy and I owned a Harley Davidson together. It was one of the few things Tommy and I ever did together.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't have the money to buy it himself, so, you know, I always had money.
After you paid off Alice.
Yeah. So, but I was a saver, and you know, Tommy was a spender. He couldn't stand it in the spot. So anyway, but the guys I had gone out with were kind of
the biker,
rough and ready, type of characters. And here's your father dressed in a button-down shirt and a pair of like Dockers and chinos, whatever you want to call them. You know, conservative dress pants. And then he has a winter suburban coat that comes to the middle of his thigh. I had never seen a man wear a coat to that length. Everybody I knew wore jackets. Nobody wore a coat to kick. It was like, this is all great. And then he had these big shiny braces and the red hair. And he's standing with this giant bowl of ice cream. And I'm like, son. And with that, I said to Eileen, we went off to her bedroom, what the hell is going on? So, I think I'm just going to this party, you know, like Daddy, you know, that we're not necessarily, you know, on a date or anything like that. So, of course, Eileen and I go to the bedroom, and then she tells me what's been going on. And she said, and your mother made me do it. And she bawled. She always bawled. Whenever I had a crisis, she bawled. So, of course, I said, well, quit bawling. I said, I suppose I can survive anything. But I said, I don't like him. He's just not my type. She said, well, I didn't pick up Bill was desperate. He wanted to go for the blind date. He's all Bill could get. So, of course, we have this little conversation in the bedroom. And, of course, we come talking now. And, of course, I was raised properly. I was always told that when you're with anybody, the best thing to do is to get them to, if you're not particularly fond of them, get them to talk about themselves. Everybody likes to talk about themselves. And she said, you know, you don't really have to pay any attention because, you know, if you're never going to see them again, it doesn't matter, because I had gone on several charity dates that my mother had set up prior to this. And that's what she told me, you know, when we went on these charity dates, these people that couldn't get dates to the prom, you know, they worked in the paper with mother, and mother would say, my daughter will go with them, don't worry, because these guys would say, you know, these men that she worked with would say, you know, they really want my son to go to this prom, you know, they got turned down for dates, and they don't know, and don't worry, my daughter will go with them. So, you creep, mom. So I've gone out with several creeps, but anyhow, and that's what she told me. She said, you know, you don't have to get heavily involved or whatever, but, you know, you just get them talking about themselves, and then they'll have a good time, and they'll remember their senior prom fondly. And you'll never have to go out with them again. I remember that was the first charity one I had to go on, and I was like, God, did you? So anyway, I thought, well, you know, I suppose I could do the same thing here.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't really matter. I'm never going to see the dude again anyway. So, and of course, since it had snowed so hard, it, needless to say, the hayride was canceled.
Uh-huh.
So instead of that, we had a suck-up, or whatever you want to call it, in somebody's basement. And basically, you know, they played records, and your father and I sat right by the record player. And your father stood there when I came in, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, oh, God. And your father was going, oh, God. And he told me I was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen in his life. And he was instantly in love with me. And he told me that 2 years later. But anyway, he said, I just was so beautiful. Just took his breath away. I said, I think it was a bowl of ice cream. Whatever.
It was a sugar rush.
Giant bowl of ice cream.
So now, were you in a dress? I mean,
was in black stretch pants and a white mohair V-neck sweater. Your father can describe it to a T. Mohair was very popular at the time.
Uh-huh.
I believe the sweater belonged to Kathy Brooks. I wore most of her clothes because she got a clothing allowance every year and was given $200 at the beginning of every fall before we went to school, and I would go help her shop for her clothes, and then we would wear them because her parents were quite wealthy.
Uh-huh.
They just got this, each of the girls got this $200 clothing allowance, and you know, we're allowed to go downtown to the department store and
pick whatever they want.
And of course, we wore uniforms at school, so it was strictly
for going out or whatever.
Wow. And of course, Kathy never worked. Joanne didn't work. I was the only one that worked.
Uh-huh.
Because of course, I didn't have any money. Well, I mean, I did when it worked, but I was very conservative. I could always spend it. And Kathy had such a wonderful wardrobe that she got tired of these things, so I helped her out.
Just doing her a favor.
Just doing her a favor. So anyway, yeah, basically we were driven to this kid's house at whatever, I don't remember, I think it was one of the girls, but anyway, and we're all in this room, and we went over and sat down by the record player.
Uh-huh.
And I started asking your father about school and so on and so forth, and people in the school and football and his whole life, and I mean, he talked all evening long, never heard a goddamn word he said, I got a sense of music. But he had a wonderful time, just like Mother said. He had a wonderful time, and talked all evening, and of course, thought he told me all this stuff, none of which I didn't pay any attention to. But anyway, and then we danced, you know, a couple of dances, and I mean, he was no great shakes as a dancer, I'll tell you that. And I mean, I had been to the Arthur Murray dance school. I mean, I could cha-cha, I could, you name a dance, I could do it, the rumba, I could do them all, because Mother had sent me, I can't remember now, who would pay for it? Was it Aunt Rose? Somebody bought me, whatever dance lessons to go to this Arthur Murray, dance school,
uh-huh,
where you learned all these different dances and stuff, I think when I was 15. And so, I mean, I could dance with the best of them.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, your father could mill around like he does now. But he's gotten much better over the years. But anyway, and of course, I was just like my mother. He did the leader. So, of course, you know, that was a different problem there, because I was doing the foxtrot, your father was doing the shuffle.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, it was like, well, he ain't much of a dancer. And it was like, oh my God, the braces, the red hair.
The ice cream, the dancing.
This is just not my night. So anyway, it was getting time to go back or whatever, and he kissed me. And he had the softest lips. anybody I'd ever kissed in my life. I just couldn't believe how soft his lips were. Because I guess it was from, you know, being chopped up by braces. I don't know. But it was like, oh, thank God, I'll never have to see this dude again. Well, then, of course, Daddy said he'd take him home. And if he had to go all the way to the city of Rochester. Mom and Dad stayed at Peggy's until everything was over, you know, so they could bring me home. So anyway, Dad and Mom were in the front seat. Of course, Jim and I are in the back seat. And of course, Mom's asking all these questions. And, you know, Mom's super sociable because Mom really likes him. I mean, Mom liked Dad from the minute she saw him. Grandma just thought he was Gatsby. And I guess compared to the other guys I dated, he probably was. I mean, at least in her opinion, I didn't have as much foresight. So anyway, he said to me when we got to his house, he said, could I have your phone number? I said, I don't have a phone. And my mother turned around and she said, University 5, whatever the hell. Rattled out the phone number, and she said, if you have a problem with that, we also have a business number, and that is such and such. She said, do you want me to write it down for you? And he said, no, I have a good memory for numbers.
Little did you know.
I yelled at my mother for the next 5 minutes. I said, I don't ever see that jerk again. And I said, what the hell did you give him my phone number for? I told him we didn't have a phone. She said, I like that phone. I really like that phone. He is a really nice young man. So then the next week he called me and he wanted to go somewhere. I said, well, I can't go unless Joanne has a date and Kathy has a date, because they didn't know anybody. They didn't have any dates. And I thought, this will get rid of them. So he comes up with a date for Joanne. He comes up with a date for Kathy, because I didn't want to go out with him alone. So, of course, you know, we all go out. I forget where the hell we did. And of course, he runs out of gas in the Rambler. The more out in Nebraska, he runs out of gas. This guy is one hell of a loser. Shows up in a 57 P Green Rambler station wagon. I used to ride in a 57 Chevy or a 65 Mustang convertible. You know, with the other guys I go out with. And this guy shows up in a pea green 57 Rambler station wagon.
That's almost not a gas.
Yes. Well, no. The problem was, I made him go pick up whoever Kathy's date was and whoever Joanne's date was before he could pick up Joanne and Kathy. So we had to drive to the other side of Rochester to get them. Because I said, we can't pick up Joanne and Kathy without having the guys there. That's not proper. So he drove, he put 150 miles on the car and never left the city of Rochester. That's probably why he ran on gas. Of course, it should have been an inkling to me at the time, but I just wasn't smart enough to think ahead. You know, that he was allergic to the gas. So, of course, he had to get out and go get gas, walk somewhere and get gas. And I found firecrackers in the glove compartment, so I set off firecrackers. The police came. Kathy Foose was, or Farrell at the time, Kathy was late. She had a curfew at midnight. By this time, it's like 12:30 or whatever. Julia Marie, her mother, calls the cops. Don't the cops find us. The cops take Kathy home. It's like, it was a complete disaster, an absolute disaster. And it was like the third time he asked me for a date, I said, I'm busy. I'm busy for the rest of my life. I really don't want to see you again.
But did you say that to him?
Yes. So he just kept calling and calling. So finally I invited him for dinner. Mother suggested I invite him for dinner. Of course, we always had Sunday dinner at 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So he was told dinner was at 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and that was just swell. He shows up at 8:15 p.m. I was walking when he showed up. And of course, Grandpa had dinner at 5 o'clock. He didn't even wait till 5:02. At 5 o'clock, he said, it's dinner time. Son of a bitch was told to be here at 5 o'clock. We're having dinner. So, of course, I thought, I never want to see this clown.
Why was he so late?
I don't know. He got talking to somebody, or the football game ran over, or whatever the hell the problem was. But of all men I ever dated in my life, your father was definitely the most persistent. He wouldn't go away. He just kept resisting. And he wouldn't take no for an answer, no matter what. He'd just show up. And then there was, this was all in November, and then in December, Aquinas had their big, I don't know, Christmas dance, New Year's dance, I don't know what it was. But I got a gorgeous prom dress. Somebody gave it to me. And I had this gorgeous blue prom dress with a little cape.
That dark blue with a black lace cape.
And somebody had given me that too. I don't think I ever bought a prom dress. Yes, I did. I bought the white one with the little cape on it that your father always loved. But I wore one of his college dances. But anyway, about 3 days before this dance, your father gets pneumococcus, which is a type of pneumonia and infection of like a tonsillitis type thing.
Uh-huh.
So, but at the same time, there was this girl who used to date in Wisconsin, or lived in Wisconsin or something, who came for a visit. And he was well enough to see her, but he couldn't take me to the dance because he was too sick to go to the dance. So he called and he said that, you know, he would buy the flowers and he would pay for the dinner and so on and so forth. Actually, he called Twink. And he asked Twink if one of his friends could take me to the dance. And he would pay for everything because he was sick. But he didn't want me to not be able to go to the dance. And he knew I'd gotten a new dress and so on and so forth. Well, Twink asked Fitzpatrick. I forget what the hell Fitz's first name was. His last name was Fitzpatrick. We always called him Fitz. And of course, he was 4 years older than I was. And he was a hunk.
Mm-hmm.
An absolute hunk. I'd always thought he was a hunk, but of course I was just a kid.
Right.
You know, because I mean, he was a big man. You know, he was, you know, 21. I was 17.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, he took me to the dance, and of course I thought it was the most romantic evening I'd ever had. I think your father profusely. Of course, I was hoping that Fitzpatrick would ask me out again,
uh-huh.
But he never did. But anyway, yep. And that kind of pissed me off, so, you know, kind of went rocking back and forth. And then when he graduated and stuff, we had started dating pretty regularly then. And then when he graduated...
So what changed your mind? Why did you decide...
Because he was so goddamn persistent.
He just wouldn't go away?
He wouldn't go away. And he was a perfect gentleman. And, I mean, he was so caring.
Uh-huh.
I mean, most of the other guys that I've gone out with, like... You know, they're once wrong to have a good time, but they didn't really care whether you had a good time or not,
right.
You know, as long as they had a good time. But Daddy was different. It was like, it was as important to him that I had a good time as it was that he had a good time.
Uh-huh.
It was just a totally different concept of anybody I'd ever known. And then he was so mature, and he looked at things, you know, so maturely and methodically and so on and so forth. What you got was a totally different concept than anybody I'd ever known.
Uh-huh.
So by the summertime, 8 months or whatever, I really liked him.
Uh-huh.
You know, pretty much by then. And of course, you know, he was going away to college. And of course, I was a senior in high school.